content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Kiplinger Personal Finance, AARP Bulletin, Kiplinger.com, and also AAA Living Magazine. Our first article from Kiplinger Personal Finance, To Tip or Not to Tip? Everyone from your barista to the car mechanic is asking for tips, and new technology adds to the pressure. Tipping has long been a tricky topic, but in recent years, the practice has taken on a whole new level of complexity. Service providers are not only increasingly soliciting tips, but they're also spinning around the touchscreen card readers with suggested percentages that can run as high as 30%. Adding to the struggle are bills with a, quote, service charge and a line for gratuity. And then there's the awkwardness of making a tipping decision while standing 2 feet from the person who just handed you your takeout pizza. It's a very complicated space, says Lizzie Post, co-author of Emily Post Etiquette, the Centennial Edition, and the great-great-granddaughter of Manners Maven Emily Post. So how did the gracious act of adding a gratuity become so confounding? The global pandemic was a major impetus, as many consumers, while holed up in their homes, wanted to support small businesses and show appreciation for service workers. COVID increased people's willingness to tip, even in circumstances where you weren't used to it, says Michael Lynn, a Cornell University professor of consumer behavior and marketing, who has published more than 50 academic papers on service gratuities. It also increased their willingness to tip larger amounts. In addition, credit card readers that give suggestions such as 18%, 20%, and 25% are more prevalent than ever. And unlike tip jars, they can cause extra gratitude angst because you must opt out. With a tip jar, failure to tip is passive. It's a sin of omission, says Lynn, whereas failure to tip with the digital screen is more active. You have to say no tip, and we generally think sins of commission are worse than sins of omission. Across the country, tip jars are proliferating, and digital prompts show no sign of abating. Still, you can take steps to feel good about the amount you tip, if you tip at all. Familiarize yourself with tipping norms. Tipping is a personal choice, but getting some insight can help you make more informed decisions. If you're uncomfortable, you could spend money in ways that don't align with your personal or financial values. Some general guidelines from the Emily Post Institute. Wait service at a sit-down establishment. Recommendation, 15 to 20% of the total. Food delivery, 10% to 15% of the bill. Also take note that food delivery fees are typically separate from gratuities. Food takeout. This is discretionary, but it's common to tip 10% or a few dollars depending on the size of the order. Tipping jars for baristas or other service workers. This is also discretionary. Consider tipping if your server goes above and beyond, or you're a regular customer. Depending on the amount, you can put your change in the jar or add a dollar or two on top of the total bill. It's fine to go above the suggested amounts, as well as also tip pre-tax. Create internal guidelines. Once you grasp the norms, think through what feels right for you. This way, you'll be mentally prepared the next time you stare down digital gratuity suggestions or a tip jar that says, "Show us some love." Everyone needs to come up with their own set of guidelines for situations around tipping, giving, or donating, says Barry Tesler, a financial therapist and author of The Art of Money. It helps us when we're faced with these moments. For instance, if you want to save money by picking up food from a restaurant instead of dining in or ordering delivery, think through what percentage, if any, fits your needs. We're all on our own budget, says Post, who is also co-president at the Emily Post Institute. Not everybody can afford to tip 20% all the time, which is why some people go to a takeout place. That expectation isn't there. As you form your internal guidelines, keep in mind that some workers, such as waiters and bartenders, often rely on tips for a large part of their income. Post says to consider tipping a restaurant worker at least 15%, even if you're displeased with the service or the meal. Use your words, not your money, to speak for you, she says. Let the manager know why your experience was so unsatisfactory. When you apply your personal principles, be sure to give yourself some wiggle room. It's helpful to have a baseline, but circumstances can vary. Your final decision will likely be based on the bill amount, your budget, the complexity of your request, and the quality of the service. There are a lot of things that can factor into your tip amount, says Post, and sometimes it's just wonderful customer service. Expect the unexpected. Whether at a fast food chain or your local dry cleaners, be prepared for tip prompts from more unexpected places. When that happens, try to pause for a moment or two instead of making a knee-jerk decision. Is spending 20% more worth it to you? And even if you overspend on a guilt tip, be gentle with yourself, Tesler says. We're always learning from these experiences and fine-tuning as we go. The next time you're in that situation, you can always do it differently. Service charges, which can appear on a bill alongside a request for a tip, are often a source of confusion. Your best bet? Ask the person serving you or the establishment's manager to explain what the charges cover. Permit yourself to skip the tip. Gratitude research Lynn says he generally tips waitstaff, bartenders, food delivery workers, and hotel housekeepers. Otherwise, I don't feel obligated to tip, he says. I'm not opposed to tipping, but I have to have a reason to tip, which means I almost never tip for counter service. When they turn those screens around, I hit the no tip option, and I don't feel bad about it. Post says that it's fine not to tip if you don't want to do so in certain circumstances, but she says it's always important to show appreciation. Say please, thank you, excuse me, says Post, who has worked as a busser, server, and cocktail waitress. I would so much rather you treat me well than spend your time deciding between 10% and 15% on the tablet I just turned around for you. Our next article from the AARP Bulletin, a new way to get fast cash. Big banks roll out cheaper alternatives to payday loans. Short on cash and needing some fast? If you've run through your emergency funds, you may have a new option for borrowing small amounts of money at a relatively low cost. Some of the largest American banks now offer what are known as small dollar loans, either low interest or flat fee loans of different sizes up to $1,000, available almost immediately and with few application hurdles. Often less expensive than running up a credit card balance, these loans are significantly cheaper than typical payday loans, which charge high effective interest rates and must be repaid quickly. Because small dollar loans require no collateral, you don't risk having your vehicle repossessed, as you might if you fall behind on a title loan. By last fall, banks operating about 23% of all branches in the U.S. were offering these loans. Bank of America, Huntington Regions, Truist, U.S. Bank, and Wells Fargo. We've been monitoring financial products for many years, and we view the small dollar bank loans as a better opportunity for consumers than payday loans, says Lori Trawinski, Director of Finance and Employment at the AARP Public Policy Institute. I think it's almost like a throwback to how banks used to be, when you would do business with a local bank, and the bank would know you, and people were often able to get credit because of the relationship they had with the local bank. Simple applications. These small dollar loans, typically available only to banks, current customers, have a straightforward application process. Approvals and funding can happen almost immediately. Terms and requirements vary by bank. To get a loan through Bank of America's Balance Assist, for example, you need to have a qualifying checking account at Bank of America that's been open for at least a year, 2.5 years if you don't have a credit score. Maintain a positive balance in all of your Bank of America checking accounts and make regular monthly deposits in your account. For U.S. Bank's Simple Loan, you need to have a personal checking account open for at least 6 months, with 3 months of recurring direct deposits. In both cases, the bank will check your credit. The application is on the bank's website and mobile banking app. We know when consumers are in financial distress, they focus on speed to get the money. Is it a sure thing, and how long will it take for it to get approved, says Alex Horowitz, principal officer focusing on consumer finance for the Pew Charitable Trust. These loans are available 24/7. You can get it from your phone or laptop, and the money is in your account within minutes. Repayment within months. Most small dollar loans come with a specific repayment schedule, 3 to 4 monthly payments in equal installments, with the first payment due 30 days after the money lands in your account. Those payments are typically deducted from the account where the funds were originally deposited. In this way, these short-term loans are unlike a credit card balance, which comes with a no repayment deadline, just the obligation to make a minimum monthly payment. Small dollar loans are, for the most part, also unlike payday loans. If you don't fully repay a payday loan on time, the outstanding balance can typically be rolled into a subsequent loan. A small dollar bank loan usually has to be paid off completely before you can take out a new one. Before you take out any loan, you want to make sure you understand the terms and obligations of repayment, fees, interest rate, minimum payment, and deadline for paying it off, Trawinski says. That's especially true if you're used to having payday loans, which are often rolled over. Lower interest rates. The effective interest rate you pay on these loans can vary on the bank you use and in some cases the size of the loan. The annual percentage rate, or APR, for Regions Protection Line of Credit, for example, is currently 12%. Compared with a national average rate of more than 20% for credit cards. The flat fees attached to other loans translate into different interest rates based on the size of the fee and the amount of time you have to repay the loan. Bank of America's Balance Assist, for example, costs $5 per loan, no matter the size, and must be paid back in 3 months. That translates into an APR of as little as 6% for a $500 loan and nearly 30% for a $100 loan. Even at the high end, these rates can be much lower than other options for people who have a difficult time obtaining credit. The government's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau points out that terms for a typical payday loan, a fee of $15 per $100, and a two-week repayment period result in an APR of almost 400%. As with any other loan, late repayments or failure to repay may negatively affect your credit score. Not repaying on time may also reduce your chances of getting a future small-dollar loan from the same institution. Credit unions and additional savings. These new loan programs came after federal regulators expressed concerns that too many bank customers with low balances in their accounts were being tripped up by complicated overdraft rules, resulting in expensive fees. So, alongside their introduction of small-dollar loans, most of these banks have modified their overdraft rules to be less financially burdensome. Consumers are on track to save more than $5 billion annually because of the overdraft changes, Horowitz says. Low-cost loans may also be available at credit unions and some smaller banks. The National Credit Union Administration allows for two different types of payday alternative loans to be offered by federal credit unions, a loan of up to $1,000, which has to be repaid in 1 to 6 months, and a loan of up to $2,000 that must be repaid in 1 to 12 months. 6 years ago, there were zero major banks offering these small installment loans or lines of credit, Horowitz says. We expect that this will continue to spread. And from Kiplinger.com, many Medicare Advantage members find challenges with plans, survey finds. Most Medicare Advantage beneficiaries said they are satisfied with their plans, but many reported overbilling and other concerns. A majority of Medicare Advantage beneficiaries responding to a recent survey said they are satisfied overall with their plans, but many also reported issues over telehealth services, overbilling, online and mobile app access, and more. As of 2021, about 26 million people were enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans, comprising about 40% of Medicare beneficiaries, as Kiplinger previously reported. But when considering a Medicare Advantage plan, be wary of promises. These private insurance alternatives to Medicare are growing in popularity at the same time that they're under scrutiny for their sales tactics and coverage, as reported. The survey of 351 Medicare Advantage beneficiaries conducted by Retirement Living to measure satisfaction with plans over the past year found that 71% of participants were satisfied with their plans. This includes 61% who believe their current coverage outperforms their previous plan. But about 25% of participants reported paying more money than they expected for copays and medications, and nearly 25% said that service providers or coverage for certain procedures were limited, according to the survey. Only 10% of those surveys expect to switch plans. Nearly 20% of participants said they had challenges receiving care due to delays caused by the prior authorization process, and 10% reported that they were overbilled for their plans, the survey found. Yet despite those and other concerns, only about 10% of participants said that they anticipate changing health insurance plans in the next year, the survey showed. While some Medicare Advantage plan members felt frustrated with their coverage, most enrollees expressed satisfaction with their benefits. Retirement Living said in commenting on the survey, in most cases, enrollees could resolve their greatest sources of frustration with a better understanding of the plan's offerings and details. The survey showed that most people are enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans to save money and increase coverage, Retirement Living said. Many survey participants listed factors such as affordable cost and out-of-pocket expenses, as well as prescription drug coverage, as positively influencing their responses. The survey included questions about premiums, customer service, and provider networks. The median age of respondents was 69 years old. Retirement Living advises anyone interested in enrolling in Medicare Advantage to consult the plan's provider's website or contact customer service to learn more about coverage, benefits, and responsibilities. And our next article appeared in the AAA Living magazine, Helping Prevent Insurance Fraud. If you own a home and a car long enough, you might encounter false insurance claim scams in which a bad actor tries to get as much of the settlement money from you as they can. Making such crimes even worse, the victims are often already dealing with misfortunes such as the loss or damage of their property or vehicle. Here are a few common insurance fraud scenarios to look out for. Property scam number one, roof or consequences. The aftermath of a major storm is prime time for bogus contractors. They may go door to door and tell you your roof is damaged and that they can repair it after you settle a claim with your insurance company. The scammer may even go up on the roof to break some shingles and then try to pass it off as hail damage. Property scam number two, the disappearing contractor. A huge tree falls on your house. The contractor you want to do the removal says that they have to rent some special equipment requiring 30% to 50% of the total cost of the job to be paid before work can begin. After you pay the contractor, they either disappear or they begin the job and they don't intend to finish, knowing there's not much you can do since you have already given them a big chunk of your money. Auto scam number one, a glass act. You're out with your car when a stranger approaches and says he's from an auto glass company. He says he can repair your cracked or chipped windshield at no cost to you if you give him your insurance information. After getting your policy number, he either files a larger claim that is warranted or uses your information to file additional false claims against your policy without you even knowing it. Auto scam number two, a pain in the neck. After a parking lot fender bender, the driver of the car you hit says they have a neck injury or some other injury. Be very skeptical. Fake injury claims can increase your premium payments. Experts recommend reporting any car accident to your police, even if it's minor. You'll be better protected if you have an official account of the circumstances. And also, play it safe. Tips that could help keep you from getting ripped off. Before hiring a contractor to do home repairs, contact your insurance company to file your claim and ensure that the damage is covered by your policy. Also, have your insurance rep inspect the damage before any repairs begin. Work only with reputable contractors who are licensed, bonded, and insured. Check online for complaints and use resources from groups such as the Better Business Bureau, AM Best, and the National Insurance Crime Bureau. Never pay more than $1,000 or 10% of a job's total. That's the legal maximum in some states. And lastly, report fraud to help fight insurance crime. Making an anonymous report to the National Insurance Crime Bureau at nicb.org. And as we wrap up our program today, we will continue our readings from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan, starting with Money Hack number 36. Live the cash-only life. It's so easy to swipe your way through monthly expenses. One traditional method to reset your finances is to leave your plastic at home and stick to cash. Can you really swear off cards in a world where so much spending happens via automatically recurring payments? Don't worry about the payments you have set up for your rent, utilities, or insurance. Focus your all-cash month or cash diet on your face-to-face transactions, such as buying groceries, fueling up, or maybe even going to yoga. Switching to cash is important because it increases what's called the pain of payment. When you swipe a card, it doesn't feel like you're paying for anything. You're just shoving a piece of plastic into a machine and receiving an item or service in exchange for that motion. Using real tangible cash makes you feel the impact of your spending as soon as you do it. Imagine the dread you've felt logging into your credit card account to see how much you've spent recently. If you use cold hard cash, you've already spent that money. It's not on a growing tab for you to deal with later. By paying with physical cash and feeling that pain now instead of later, you can be more proactive in making good financial choices as you go rather than facing them down the road. Try paying with cash for an entire month, and you may be surprised at how your finances transform just during a few weeks. Pair this method with the envelope system for an extra challenge. Hacks 37, make it harder to shop online. Nothing kills the buzz of shopping online or via mobile app like having to get off the couch and dig your credit card out of your wallet. It's tempting to save your payment information on that website so you can shop more quickly next time and check out with a single click. But that convenience could be costing you money. A Bankrate survey found that 64% of people save their credit card number online or in mobile apps. And retailers know that if you save your payment info for next time, there's much more likely to be a next time that you'll visit their website and make a purchase. Saving your payment info takes the pain-free experience of paying with plastic to a whole new level. Not only are you using a card, but you're not even touching it or inputting the numbers. That makes it easier to spend more than you'd like. And we're out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and please be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.